Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not just what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. How can Christians use the aesthetic argument for God's existence? Ken will discuss beauty as a pointer to God on part two of two today. Ken, this is an argument that more of us should consider using. Is that correct? At least that's what I came away with on the last podcast.
Yeah, you know, we have lots of arguments that we make for God, the cosmological, the teleological, the ontological, the moral argument. In today's program, I'm going to raise the question, is it possible we could effectively use an aesthetic argument in our evangelism and apologetics? So I'm interested in this question because it kind of relates to the zeitgeist of our time, the spirit of the age. So we're going to talk a lot about is the aesthetic argument effective in evangelism and apologetics?
Sounds good.
Well, let me begin again by talking a little bit about these three transcendentals, truth, goodness, and beauty. Scripture speaks about truth, goodness, and beauty. Let me read the passage that we did last time in terms of beauty. This is from Psalm 27:4. The psalmist says, "One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple." Well, God doesn't have truth, goodness, and beauty. God is truth, goodness, and beauty. And when God created the universe and when he created us in his image, he imbued that creation with these universals. And if the biblical God exists and Christian theism is the correct worldview, we should encounter truth, goodness, and beauty in life. And I think one of the things that I want to raise is, again, is it possible we've underutilized beauty? I know that apologetics is, you know, it's what you do with your head. It's arguments. It's reasons. You know, we gravitate toward argumentation. But I wonder if there isn't a way to kind of utilize the beauty argument and to present it. And what I'd like to share a little bit here is the thinking of a couple people on this topic. Let me introduce again to Peter Kraft. Peter Kraft is a Catholic philosopher. I think Kraft has actually written more than 100 books, so he's written more books than years he's actually lived. He's a remarkable thinker, very popular among evangelicals. I kind of call him the Catholic C.S. Lewis. You know, he writes about many, many different topics. But here's some of the things that he shared about truth, goodness, and beauty that I think are very applicable when it comes to the possibility of utilizing beauty in terms of evangelism and apologetics. Kraft says about truth, goodness, and beauty, he says that goodness is the first in value. Goodness is the first in value. That is, in terms of what we think is important, goodness is critically important. I mean, think about that in terms of your own experience. Think of that in terms of how important morality is, how important moral goodness is. And so goodness, he says, is first in value. But then he says, beauty motivates us most. Beauty motivates us most. Then he says, truth trumps goodness and beauty. And I think what Kraft simply means by that last comment is, look, goodness and beauty can be very powerful. and they can be very attractive. But if they're not true, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting that he would take this position that goodness is first in value, but beauty motivates us most. Well, if beauty motivates us most, is it possible we could use beauty to reason with people? And one of the points I made in our last program was that I know secular people and they would never go to church. And they're not interested in talking about God, but in terms of beauty, music, art museums, natural beauty, they're all over it. Mm-hmm. They're very interested in that. And I think it's fair to say that secular people don't want to give up beauty because they've given up God. They don't necessarily want to give up spirituality, even though they've rejected religion. And so now I guess, raising this question, if that's where everybody is, then why shouldn't we pay attention to that question of beauty? I remember a number of years ago when social media was beginning to be popular, and we had discussions about whether, Reasons to Believe should have a presence on Facebook and Twitter. And, we kind of went back and forth and, the good, the bad, and the ugly of social media. But, one person said, well, that's where all the people are at. So why don't we want to be where all the people are at?
Well, the crazy people.
Well, that's kind of the ugly over there, right? The good, the bad, the ugly. If it is true that Crafe says that that beauty motivates us most, and if it is true that people are interested in beauty, then is it possible maybe we haven't spent enough time talking about beauty? Now, here's a quotation from Crafe. He says, "Love is the path of goodness, reason is the path to truth, and creativity is the path to beauty." Now, again, Crafe is a real student of C.S. Lewis. In fact, I think I've heard Crafe say that his favorite Christian thinker is C.S. Lewis. That's a pretty profound statement from a Catholic philosopher. I mean, you do have people like St. Augustine, you have St. Thomas Aquinas, etc. But he said that Lewis may be his favorite thinker. But he says, love is the path. Love is the path to goodness. Reason is the path to truth. Creativity is the path to beauty. When I think of the most influential apologists of the 20th century, I would say that Lewis and Tolkien have to be way up there. Now, Lewis, of course, has, the rational side. He engages in the argument from, the moral argument. He talks about the argument from Jesus. He has this whole other side of kind of the rational apologetics. My only point here is to say that, the Chronicles of Narnia have sold 100 million copies and The Lord of the Rings has sold 150 million copies. And I'm not sure that some people who read Lewis's, when they read the Narnian Chronicles or they read Tolkien, I don't know that they know that Narnia and Middle Earth are really conveying a Christian worldview, but they're enormously popular. And again, they're along the line of creativity. They're telling stories. And, they're painting a picture in the minds of people. Again, I know many non-Christians, and they've read Narnia and they've read Middle Earth and they're attracted to it. And they may not realize how much of that imagery how much of the truth, goodness, and beauty present in those writings, of course, reflects a Christian perspective. Now, all of that simply to say, is it possible we haven't appealed enough to beauty? When it comes to truth, goodness, and beauty and the focus of apologetics and evangelism, is it possible that we now live at a time where beauty can be maybe a very valuable tool? Mm-hmm. And was Lewis and Tolkien ahead of the game?
Now, when you say use it, you mean, say, in a conversation with a person that you're discussing the presence of beauty and they're acknowledging that presence and then asking the question, where does that beauty come from?
Well, I think it can be subtle. I mean, I think we can begin by saying, look, Lewis and Tolkien seem to paint these worlds where they talk about, you know, truth, they talk about goodness, and they talk about beauty, and we find these ideas captivating. And no doubt you find these ideas captivating, but what is the ground and source of this? Or, you know, if it's an atheist at an art museum, what does a meaningless universe have to say about beauty? Where do these ideas come from? Where do we identify them?
Yeah, you know, I thought of another practical example. A lot of Christians like to paint, and what I mean by that is get a palette out and go somewhere outdoors and paint. We've all seen people at a lake or at the beach. I saw a woman last year at the Grand Canyon. She got a spot there and was painting the Grand Canyon. That it might be something to think about for people who are Christians who like to do that, to just set up somewhere, you know, and start painting. Someone else who might be doing the same thing might join you, or people might start asking, what do you see there? I notice your painting. So that's just another, you know, practical example for Christians who maybe like to go outdoors and take a palette with them.
And again, I bring us back to that point I made in our previous show, guys. You know, Hugh Ross said when he was working at Caltech, a lot of the science guys, they're not terribly interested in talking about spiritual truths. They're not interested in religious arguments. But, you know, Hugh talked them into going backpacking. Here they are out in the middle of nowhere. They're out in this beauty, natural beauty. Hugh said, you know, they seem more interested in kind of asking the big questions of life. Why is a universe like this so beautiful? You know, could it be, if I could again raise Jonathan Edwards, even though Edwards is known probably most by evangelicals for his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, actually, Edwards talked a lot more about beauty. And his comment was that beauty has a way of taking us away from ourselves. Original sin kind of gives us self-obsession, but beauty, and he thought the prime beauty was the beauty of God in nature. It had a way of changing us. And, you know, I've said before with my wife loves natural beauty. And I know when we've gone to the national parks or even if it's just taking a walk around the neighborhood during, you know, the evening hours, I could tell that stress drops off. She feels, hey, this gives me energy. It gives me a sense of wonder. It's a visceral type of experience. And if that's the case, is it possible we need to think a little bit more about, you know, how we might use this type of reasoning? Mm-hmm. Well, let me introduce you to another thinker here. And I'm going to ask you what you think of this. This is Robert Barron, spelled B-A-R-R-O-N. Barron is a Catholic bishop, conservative Roman Catholic thinker. He develops, I think, some interesting ideas. He says, quote, "The best way to evangelize," wow, "the best way to evangelize is to move from the beautiful, then to the good, then to the true. The best way to evangelize is to move from the beautiful, then to the good, and then to the true." Now, what does he mean by that? Why would you begin with an aesthetic argument? Why wouldn't you begin with truth? You know, the universe had a beginning. If anything that begins has a cause, therefore the universe has a cause. Or begin with morality. You know, we have a sense of morality. There must be a moral lawgiver. Barron says this. He says that we live in a postmodern world. We live in kind of a post-truth world where people question both truth and goodness. Truth and goodness people are suspicious of truth and goodness. You know, they say things like everybody has their own truth, or goodness is merely in the eye of the beholder. So Barron here is making the case that non-Christians are going to expect you to start with truth and goodness, but they don't want to hear your intellectualization. They don't want to hear you intellectualize. They don't want to hear you moralize. So why not, in Barron's words, why not make a case for God with the beautiful? Why not lead with the beautiful and then backtrack to the goodness and to the truth? Now, of course, what's interesting, I think, about this presentation, and Barron would say, for example, you know, point to the Parthenon, point to the Sistine Chapel, point to some of the great literature in Western civilization, make that your starting point, and then circle back to goodness and truth. And what I think is interesting, of course, here is, I mean, think about the kind of zeitgeist in which we live. You know, whether you call it postmodernism or you call it post-truth, it seems that all of these ideas, these universals, truth, goodness, and beauty, it seems that secular society has relativized them. They are relativistic. They are subjective. So when it comes to truth, it's just what the majority thinks. Or when it comes to truth, it's just a popular consensus. Or it's just your personal preference. When it comes to goodness, well, that's just situational. Remember situational ethics? Or that's just your self-satisfaction or your personal fulfillment. Now, of course, they could do that to beauty as well. They could say, well, that's just in the eye of the beholder. But the point I'm making here initially is, can you see how secularism has relativized and subjectivized these universals? And it's deflected them. So Bishop Barron is arguing that maybe we want to lead with beauty because beauty, in his mind, it is, what does he say here? He says that beauty is winsome and non-threatening. It is alluring. It doesn't tell you, you know, you've sinned against God and repent, you wretched sinner. It's much more subtle. It is much more alluring. And then, of course, Barron argues you still got to get back to goodness and truth. But maybe you want to circle back in that way. What do you think of what Bishop Barron is saying here?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Dave, I'd be interested to hear what you say, because One of the things that a lot of people find beautiful is music. So that can be a place where you can find all kinds of people who will appreciate the beauty of music in of various types. And that can be something you have in common with a lot of people, where you can start to make those bridges to goodness and eventually truth as well. So I like the argument, and yeah, I could see other uses for it as well.
It's interesting to me that Friedrich Nietzsche, who's the composer, I got all these names in my mind right now. One of the classical composers that, the Alleluia,
Handle.
Handel. Nietzsche said, "I'll never forget the first time I heard Handel's Messiah." I mean, here's the atheist of the atheist. I mean, Nietzsche is kind of the Dawkins of his time, and in other ways, he's not the Dawkins of his time. He comes at secularism very differently. But Nietzsche is essentially saying, look, if we get rid of God, what happens to Handel? If we get rid of God, what happens to love your neighbor? If we get rid of God, what happens to, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So what do we do with science? And Joe, I think you're right. I mean, let's talk a little bit about this. Dave and I have a running debate. He likes Beethoven and I like the Beatles. You can tell who's corrupted in that comment. Well, of course, one of the points we try to emphasize when we talk about apologetics is, on one hand, secular people are going to have a, there's going to be a clash of worldviews, but what we might call antithesis. Non-Christians bring differing ideas about truth, goodness, and beauty to their worldview. But on the other hand, non-Christians are made in the image of God, and even though the image is effaced, it's not erased. And they see general revelation, the heavens declaring the glory of God. They have a conscience within Romans 2. And they're the recipients of common grace. And therefore, the Beatles can make some good music. And secular scientists can do good science. And so there is a connection. And I think sometimes when we think about apologetics and we think about what kind of methodology we're going to use, I think we need to think about both, that there's always going to be a clash of worldviews when we talk to non-Christians. I mean, even if they're kind of soft-spoken and they're not a type of personality, at some level, if you talk about truth, goodness, and beauty, you're going to get some pushback. But I think we also need to realize that there is common ground. I mean, people like Newton could do good science because he was religious, but Einstein could do good science and he wasn't religious, because the backdrop of the common grace. And Dave, what do you think about this idea of beauty? Do you think What do you think of Behrens' idea that maybe leading with it because it's alluring, it is winsome, non-threatening, but then you circle back? What do you think of that?
I think that it has some real merit to think about. I, as I said before, I would like to try it out on my atheist friends. One of the issues is that, a lot of art, music, has been corrupted. The enemy is active in corrupting anything that if that is important to God. And certainly beauty has been corrupted in the world that we live in, so that you have, I mean, I'm not saying that all music is popular music is corrupt. But I think that there is within popular music a corrupted version of it that is associated with drugs and sex. And at the same time, if we can have, as you have said, common ground, if you can find areas in which those that you're trying to share with have a similar view that you do about some aspect of beauty, it seems to me that it has some real merit for then discussing the question of why do we think these things are beautiful? What is it that we're attracted to? And what's the ground for it? This is not unrelated to the story that C.S. Lewis tells in his book, Surprised by Joy. I think that this joy that he speaks of there is some kind of aesthetic experience and realization that there's something in this world that is at a higher plane, and it's a form of beauty. He doesn't call it beauty, but he refers to it as joy. But I think the eventual realization that the source of that, which he couldn't really find until he came to accept God in his life, and in particular Christianity, where he found that the source of that joy was God himself. But I think it's sort of related to what it is that we're talking about here.
Well, you bring up a couple things there. I want to talk a little bit about them. Now, Peter Kraft, of course, says that Peter Kraft would say something along these lines. He would say that we can't get enough truth, goodness, and beauty. I mean, we don't tell ourselves, for example, well, I'm only going to take truth, goodness, and beauty on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but not on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. No, we want truth, goodness, and beauty. And I think Peter Kraft would even say that we're always looking for it, even when we don't find it. I mean, let me mention just a couple areas. Dave, you talked about, the music of the popular music of the 60s, particularly the popular rock music, the mantra sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Well, it promises a lot and it doesn't deliver much. And people who followed those paths, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, a lot of times their lives have been wrecked by that. But I think Kraft would say, what are people looking for when they talk about, well, I want to have as much sex as I can. Well, is it merely I want to have as much pleasure? Is it total hedonism? Or are these people actually looking for intimacy? I'm deprived of something. I want more intimacy. I think you raise an interesting element, Dave. I was telling my son and my wife the other day that there are certain groups, popular groups, that I don't listen to because I find that my experience in listening to their music, they leave me apathetic. They leave me feeling a sense of kind of despair. And therefore, I try to be very kind of careful about what I do. Now, on the other hand, by the way, I've always found that Bob Dylan kind of leaves me kind of apathetic. On the other hand, the Beatle music usually makes me happy. I feel kind of up. When I listen to Pink Floyd, I think they're really outstanding musicians and they make really good music, but I feel kind of down when I listen to their music. And, these kinds of questions. Now you could turn that around. when I was a non-Christian, I kind of like listening to music that was kind of what I would describe as searching. There was music that says, you know, I'm looking for something and I can't find it. I still haven't found what I'm looking for, I think is, you know, the words of U2. Sometimes people who have been involved in hedonism, they can tell you quite clearly that sex, drugs, and rock and roll don't do it. Or you can kind of learn from, you know, their kind of experience. Now, what I would say in that kind of context, and we're moving a little bit away from, you know, the question of can we use beauty in terms of evangelism and apologetics, but I think that's okay, because we're also talking to the Christian. And I would tell people, for example, truth, goodness, and beauty, if these are these attributes that come from God, then, you know, read a classic book. Read a classic book of Western civilization. You know, go to an art museum. Go out into nature. Spend time in reflection. I think that these can be very powerful ways of kind of relating to that. I mean, if you watch movies, there are some movies that are really very insightful about presenting things. But Dave, as you mentioned, there is truth, goodness, and beauty, but then there's also the false, the bad, and the ugly. And some movies are ugly. Some movies are false. You know, there are things, but I want you to notice that when people engage in the false, the bad, and the ugly, they don't go to it and say, well, I know this is false, bad, and ugly, so I'm going to get into it. Usually they're looking for something else. You know, even people who watch pornography, they, I think, are trying to pursue something good. They want to be fulfilled or they want to be satisfied. Now, porn doesn't give that in, it gives no satisfaction. It only burdens you even more. It affects negatively the soul. But it, again, is this idea that we seem really motivated by the true, the good, and the beautiful. But we now live in a fallen world, and our nature is disordered by sin. It doesn't mean that we're completely sinful in everything we do, and it certainly doesn't mean the image of God is gone. But it does mean that we encounter false ideas. We encounter bad or evil actions, and we encounter things that are not attractive. And yet the Christian worldview says all of that. The Christian worldview says, sure, you are going to find those things in a fallen world. But, you know, you listen to Bach. I was listening to Schubert the other day, and the Adagio, and I was gripped. Just kind of pulled me in. Same things happens when I read classic books. It has a way of, you know, kind of gripping me. And so we can again kind of appeal to these kind of universals, as the track that, you know, people kind of, you know, make their way upon. And so I would say, I think Barron's ideas are interesting. And again, I think if we think of the context in which we live, I mean, we're living in an increasingly post-Christian age. Mm-hmm. I think we see it when it comes to marriage. I think we see it when it comes to sexuality and gender. I think we see it in a variety of ways, and it could be that you know, beauty is not as you know, it's not as in your face. It is not as confrontational as some of these others, but you do have to get back to it. I mean, you can't stop with beauty. You do have to talk about a person's relationship with God and the problem of sin and Jesus coming into the world to make us right with God through his crucifixion and resurrection, the triumphant resurrection, and you know who he was and all of those kinds of things. And yet, Dave and Joe, you know, it's not the apologetic books that focus on truth and goodness they're not nearly as popular as maybe a Lewis and a Tolkien book that are much more subtle, but kind of lay out these, you know, kind of a big picture. And so I wonder if we haven't kind of underutilized beauty.
One of Lewis's comments, he speaks about one place that reason is the organ for truth, but imagination is the organ for meaning.
Yeah.
And imagination would probably be engaged more with beauty.
Yeah.
Than with truth, particularly, only truth insofar as it's beautiful. And so that sort of fits with his approach of when you engage in these books like Lewis's or Tolkien's stories, it stirs up the imagination in a way that brings meaning that then can be led. A person who is engaged in that way can be led into thinking about the aspects of goodness and then eventually truth.
I mean, what if we did an experiment? What if we have our Christian friend and our non-Christian friend, and we invite them to read a classic book. And then we have interaction with them, and we say, you know, what did that book teach you about truth, goodness, and beauty?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do we go with that? Or we meet a Christian and non-Christian friend, and we say, how about if we listen to some beautiful music? And Dave, to you know, maybe we'll be some classical music.
Come to that, huh?
So, you know, side B of Abbey Road, I'll tell you, it'll tear your heart out. What if you listened to some classical music, and then you talked with both your Christian and non-Christian friend, or again, you engage in the imagination. And kind of engage in kind of some of the universal stories. It seems like these might be useful in evangelism and apologetics, but they may also be useful, you know, to Christians. I mean, Joe, maybe Christians ought to spend more time going to the national parks. Maybe they ought to spend more time reflecting. To source Pascal, maybe people ought to spend more time alone reflecting on these kinds of truths. Mm-hmm. So I think that these universals can be very powerful, and I think in some respects, thinking about truth, goodness, and beauty can bring you closer to God. Now, of course, they don't bring you closer to God the way the Holy Spirit does. They don't bring you closer to God the way Scripture uniquely does. But, you know, maybe you want to put down the bad movie and spend some time listening to music. Maybe you want to, you know, instead of going on social media all the time, and I can tell you, it takes a lot of your time. Maybe you want to pick up a classic book and say, hey, I, I'm gonna read, you know, a chapter, half a chapter each day, and I'm gonna work through this kind of thing. So the universals, truth, goodness, and beauty, I think they have application to the non-Christian, you know, as well as the Christian.
Yeah. You know, it occurs to me while you're giving us ideas there that even in a digital age with so many people online, that could even be a bridge to discussions about goodness and truth, because sometimes my son plays a lot of games, so I might look over his shoulder and notice the graphics, and I'm thinking, wow, cool graphics. I mean, whoever created that, they know what they're doing. So you can see even beauty there, because we're created in God's image. We can make these beautiful graphics on our games, or even an animated movie. You know, all of us have children and grandchildren now, in the case of Dave, where we watch these animated movies, and they're beautiful. And along with the actors' voices there and production value, it's like, that was really a satisfying and a beautiful movie. So those are bridges as well in, with the people, maybe perhaps in the digital world.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, you know, I might be tempted to say that the two most popular Christian apologists of the 20th century were C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer. And I think what's interesting about both of them is they're interested in beauty and the imagination. You know, we were talking about kind of popular rock music, a number of kind of the who's who rock and rollers either spent time with Schaeffer or were interested in reading his books. You know, this idea, they were a number of leading rock and roll musicians. They went to art school. John Lennon was one of the Beatles, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones. Even Eric Clapton was interested in this question of beauty and art form. And I think one of the things that made Schaeffer very popular is he sought to kind of interact with that side. And so when we're asking the question, is it possible to engage in evangelism and apologetics by using beauty, I think we have examples of that in Schaeffer and in Lewis, and I think in Tolkien as well. And so we do see that kind of thing being done. And
let me ask a question along that line of Schaeffer. I've mentioned earlier in our private conversations that I recently watched Schaeffer's 10-part series on How Should We Then Live? An old series done quite a few years ago, I think in the 70s. So the quality is not the greatest, but it was very interesting. But one of his criticisms of art in particular, well, art, music, really the subject of beauty, is the way in which humanism has been brought into the artistic and the you know, discussion of the beautiful, so that it's kind of a distraction away from the kind of truth that we're hoping to steer people towards, which is a belief in God. Do you have any thoughts or comments on that?
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, I think that there's truth in that. I mean, sinful people, they bring their soul, they bring their value system, they bring their ideas of reality to bear when it comes to, you know, these aesthetic fields. And there's no doubt it can be, I think, corrupted. Yet I would kind of turn that around, Dave, and it's a point I made earlier. I actually think sometimes listening to these people who have pursued hedonism, who have, you know, flirted with fame and fortune and have been dissatisfied, are actually a testimony to the very truth of Christianity, that, you know, these temporal things don't lead us to fulfillment. That sex, drugs, and rock and roll, it overpromises and underproduces. And so I think on one hand, I agree there can be the corruption of these things. On the other hand, I think sometimes it is, you know, it is the articulate sinner that is able to point out that, is this all there is? You mean, you know, I'll quote John Lennon, who the BBC was the man of the 60s, the man of the decade. Lennon said at one point in 1965, when the Beatles were on top of the world, he said, "Here I am, rich and famous as I always wanted to be, and nothing's happening." You know, sometimes these people can kind of give us the truth. And on the other side of the coin, Dave, I would also say this. You know, just as people bring their corrupting ideas, we should also recognize that non-Christians can do good works. You know, they're, because of common grace, because of the image of God. I mean, Albert Einstein was a pretty worldly guy, but, you know, he's the man of the 20th century. At least Time magazine picked him that way because he changed the way the world looked at the universe.
Right.
And so you have the good, bad, and the ugly, right? In all of them. And, you know, I think we have to kind of evaluate, I would evaluate it at least in that kind of context.
Right.
Ken, I wonder if you could kind of summarize for us a good way to think about and incorporate in our thinking how to use the aesthetic argument. You've been focusing on it for two podcasts, but if we're to walk away with kind of a nugget here at the end, can you do that for us?
Yeah. I think the way that I would approach it, Joe, somebody, I'm trying to remember how I kind of came to this, but somebody kind of sparked in my mind what, you know, if you were down to the end of your life and you had to give a reason why you were a Christian, you know, what would you say? What, you know, push comes to shove, you're right down to the end of your life and you're going to go into eternity. Why are you going to hold on to your faith? And I thought to myself, well, I think when it all comes down to it, I think Christianity is the best explanation of my life and of the world in which I live. And again, that comes back to the universe with its origin, with its complex fine-tuning. But it goes to all of these other particular areas, and especially Jesus Christ. I personally think that if the Gospels are made up, if it's just mythical, if they're just a bunch of untrue stories, I agree with Peter Kraft. I think the apostles are greater than all the writers in history because they've invented this man that I think is truly extraordinary. But I of course don't believe that. I believe the reason that they wrote these gospels about Jesus was he was who he said he was. He was the Son of God. And so I guess to try to answer your question, Joe, I would raise the question, look, where does beauty best fit? Does beauty fit into a world that is the product of matter and time and chance? Does beauty fit easily into a world that is the product of blind, mechanistic, natural processes? Or does beauty fit better into a world where God is infinitely beautiful and is the product, and the universe is the product of his truth and his goodness and his beauty? I think that that's a very powerful way of reasoning. I don't think minds come from non-minds. I don't think reason comes from non-rational sources. I don't think the effect is ever greater than the cause. And I think the best explanation for why we are attracted to music and why we are attracted to paintings and statues and have an aesthetic sense, and the reason why beauty hits us in a visceral sense, Joe, because that's the way God intended it to be.
Yeah. You know, I like what you said. I think it was at the beginning of the first podcast. We've been doing this for two podcasts, where you mentioned that we, as humans, we can create art and we can call it beautiful, but that's not beauty. Beauty is outside of ourselves. So I like how you introduced the two podcasts, and maybe that's a good way to kind of think about it, we can create art, but beauty is something else.
Yeah, we don't create beauty. We create art that is an expression of that beauty. And yeah. I think that is correct. I think that is the correct kind of way of thinking about it. And I want to tell our listeners who, you know, as you think through these kinds of things, is it possible? I know for me, I'll be candid with you. When I go to church, I want to be reminded of the truth of Christianity. So I like to see some stained glass. I like to see some images that reflect, you know, the Christian idea of beauty. Now, again, Protestants and Catholics and Orthodox have different standards and look at those things a little more differently. But I like to be reminded of the beauty of God, and I like Christian art, and I like, you know, the aesthetic elements that come through Christian history. But I would also say that, we might want to reflect on how we can use these arguments with our non-Christian friends. And we might want to ask ourselves, if God is the author of truth, goodness, and beauty, then is it possible that just as poetry helped C.S. Lewis get through post-traumatic stress, is it possible that these, by pursuing truth, goodness, and beauty, we can have a more holistic and, a greater sense of God's fulfillment in our life?
Yeah, very good. All right. I think you mentioned a couple of resources on the past podcast. Maybe you can repeat those for us today.
Yes. Very soon I'm going to have a new book coming out. We're looking forward to RTB Press releasing that book. It is entitled Christianity Cross-Examined. And I have a section of one of the chapters that makes this case for beauty. So I hope our listeners will be interested in that. In the last podcast, we also talked about Christian philosophers, William C. Davis and Paul Copan, who have made arguments on the basis of beauty. And, I would also draw people's attention to Alexander Proust, who talks about the different varieties of beauty, even the beauty of mathematics itself. So those are some of those sources, Joe, that our listeners can take part in.
All right, terrific. Thank you for that. You've written a recent blog post on the three transcendentals as well that people can find by checking out reflectionsbyken.wordpress.com. Let us know your comments and questions. You can reach Ken at RTB_case samples. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Look for the Reasons to Believe podcast and you'll find Straight Thinking there. For Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory, but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.